If people give you a cool nickname, go with that shit. Do not resist cool nicknames.
Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality Podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 69. I am super excited to welcome to the show Ryan Stueman, CEO and founder of Hardcore Closer and Break Free Academy. This man is the ultimate entrepreneur. He's a four-time best-selling author, motivational speaker, sales coach, podcast host, blogger, and a regular contributor to Forbes, Entrepreneur, Addicted to Success, Good Men Project, Lighter Side of Real Estate, Huffington Post, and so much more. Ryan is best known for consulting with alpha personality business owners on rapidly growing their sales through the use of strong marketing and advertising. With his no BS take action approach, Ryan has been able to help high income and high net worth performers make adjustments in their businesses that unleash windfall profits. His programs have propelled numerous clients from 5- and 6-figure incomes to 7 figures a year. It doesn't matter if you're selling cars, homes, financial services, or consulting services, Ryan's Sales Mastery can help you generate higher quality leads, increase your closing ratios, and show you how to charge premium fees for the items you already sell. Ryan, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm excited to be here, Lori. We're going to have an awesome show, I promise you. It's going to be good times today.
Excellent. I can't wait to jump into the story. But before we get to your entrepreneurial journey, I want to kind of rewind a little bit. Long before you began selling at the car wash, what did you think life was going to be like long before the age of 13 when you were a kid? What did you see as your future?
Well, so one of my earliest memories was my mom and my dad and my aunt and my other aunt and my uncle. Sorry, the Beverly Hillbillies over here. But anyway, all getting brand new Lincoln Continentals. And now this is like 81 or 82, and they were all like powder blue and purple and shit that you wouldn't be caught dead in driving today. And they were those old Lincolns with like the 480 engines and the trunk that you could hit a train and it would knock the train off the track. You know, we used to roll around in that thing. Car seats weren't a thing. We would sit. The front seat was so big that I would stand on the passenger side of the front seat and then just hold my hands against the dash. And that's how we drove around back then, right? Because car seats weren't a thing. I remember as I got older, it took two people to scoot the seat up. You remember those? You had to like pull it on both sides and be like, one, two, three, push, right?
Coordinated
if not,
efforts,
it get all sideways on you. And so, and that was when I realized, like, none of my other friends got, like, parents got cars and stuff for Christmas. And I was like, man, my family, like, they must have money. We have this farm, and my grandpa's buying these people cars. And so one of my grandfathers he owned a glass company, and he had worked for Johnson & Johnson. And according to him, he said that he was the guy that, like, initiated three shifts. Like, before, they were wearing factory workers out because they were making them work 12-hour shifts. And my uncle came in and said – or my grandpa came in and consulted for Johnson & Johnson. Was like, hey, why don't we do 8-hour shifts and just do three shifts? And we cut back on overtime and you know, exhaustion and everything else, and that's pretty much the standard now. And he had this glass factory that he ran, and my other grandpa, on my mom's side, he owned a bunch of savings and loans. And so my earliest memories were these two guys that were, you know, super wealthy, and in my mind, as a little kid anyway, you know, it's like, my family's rich. And they had everything going for him. My grandfather, the banker, he drove a different car every – because like half the dealerships used him – as the bank to loan money on cars. And so he was driving just their loaner cars from the dealership all the time. He had different cars all the time. They had badass houses. My other grandpa lived in like a mansion on Lake Ray Hubbard and stuff. And then 1986 hit and they lost it all. If you'll recall, the SNLs crashed because of some stuff that the government did and some weird lending laws passed. And the SNLs crashed. And they caused a lot of my grandfather's friends to lose their businesses and houses. And it wasn't his fault, obviously. The banks crashed, like all of them. There was like thousands of them that went under. It wasn't just my grandpa's. It was this whole thing. And destroyed a lot of real estate deals. My grandma ended up going to federal prison because she was trying to help some of the families out by, you know, making sure that their money was there for their business, and then falsified some papers so that they didn't lose shit. And then she ended up going to federal prison for like 6 months. And then my other grandfather, he couldn't get loans anywhere anymore because all the, you know, what would be the essentially a credit union today, all those went out of business. And my grandfather's included, so he couldn't get money for his glass factory. And like basically everybody moved into a trailer. Like one of my grandfathers, like he went from like balling, driving a different car every week, to living in a trailer on some land in like this town in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
My other grandpa, you know, he had to sell and move into a duplex. And they're, you know, grandparents, like at 50 years old, you're supposed to have like your shit together. You know what I mean? Like at that point, you had money and you used to be rich, and then all of a sudden you got to move into like a duplex out in the middle of nowhere or a trailer house on some land. And now I look back, and as a young man, you don't think much of it. You're like, we had money, lost it, whatever, right? You're just a kid. But now as I look back as an adult, I'm like, that had to have been devastating, and it had to have been one of those early like, shit, you can make it, but that shit can leave quickly too.
Right,
that had to be the mental impression that was always. But that was like my first experience with entrepreneurism. And then my mom and my stepdad and my real dad too. You know, they were always W-2 employees. They never took a risk. After that, they never wanted to start their own business or anything like that. Like my mom and my dad and all them always did. They always worked for somebody else. And so, you know, that's how I got the job at the car wash that you mentioned. Was my stepdad worked for somebody else that owned a car wash.
So. Long before you began at the car wash, as you mentioned, you were really watching your family come up with their businesses, their practices, the bank and the glass factory, and really living a booming lifestyle. And then you also witnessed it disappear in a rapid, rapid form. At that age, when you began doing the car wash sales and so forth, I believe from there you kind of moved on to mortgages and became successful with the mortgages. What was it that kind of kicked you into that thought process of, okay, I want to become an entrepreneur myself? What was it that gave you that sort of drive versus what some people would have taken as a fearful situation to kind of find stability versus jumping into this sort of a journey?
Like I said, my two grandfathers didn't have a boss. And so it kind of like runs in my blood, you know, and I try working for other people. And I would eventually do the same thing my grandma did, like screw up and end up going to prison, right? And really in trying to protect somebody else as well, right? Because, I mean, anybody can get out of jail if you tell on people and things like that, which I didn't do. My grandfathers, but they say things skip a generation. Mm-hmm. So my grandfathers were entrepreneurs. It shocked the shit out of my parents. They ended up becoming employees. But then I don't want to become an employee because I see the mediocre life that they're living. Okay. And so it skipped that generation. And here I am wanting to be an entrepreneur. And sadly for me, the first entrepreneurial venture that I was ever involved in was selling drugs. And, you know, I went to prison for it. So it's not like I'm sitting here telling something that's not on record or whatever. And right. I worked at the car wash, and this guy, Chuck, came in. He's dead now, so it's okay to talk about him. Chuck, sorry, man. And can't get me now. But anyway, he came in and he had like this nice Mustang. And when I say like a nice Mustang, I mean, it was like a drag car. It was like unbelievable. Nothing in Dallas existed like this thing at the time. Then he drove a brand new Infiniti, which was like, they were brand new cars back then. And they were like unheard of and super expensive. $50,000 cars didn't exist, you know, really in that world back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought he was a doctor or a lawyer or something like that. And one day I asked him, I was like, hey man, what do you do for a living? And because he was washing his cars two or three times a week, you know, and he's like, oh man, you know, do you smoke weed? And I was like, yes. And he's like, well, you know, I can hook you up if you need some, man. Just here's my beeper number. That's how long ago it was. And he's like, here's my beeper number. Just hit me up. And so I remember calling him like the next day and being like, hey man, can I come and meet you somewhere? And he's like, yeah, come over. And he gives me this address. And I go over there. And it was almost like a multi-level marketing meeting now that I look back as an adult. Cause like, here I am, this young man that ain't making any kind of money. And like, I'm working at the car wash and averaging about $15 an hour. and, you know, working 70 hours a week in the sun, hating my life. And he's like, hey, man, you know that you can change your life? Do you keep your options open when it comes to income? Because marijuana distribution can totally open new doors to your financial future. Except for it was more like, yo, dog, you want to sell some weed and make some real money? You want to keep wiping off other motherfuckers' cars all your life? And I'm like, okay, man, I'm in. Right? So and so I start selling a little weed, you know, but it was the first time in my life anybody had ever offered me. Now, of course, I knew it was illegal, right? Unless I'm not stupid. I'm just saying, but it was the first time that I had ever had somebody offer me to sell something and make money. And a lot of good salespeople and marketers came from selling drugs. Some of them will admit it, some of them won't. But that's an interesting dynamic because you got to be able to market your stuff, but only to the right people, because if the wrong people find out, then you go to jail like I did because the wrong people found out. And so you got to be like, it's like a fine line you walk when you're marketing that stuff. It really teaches you how to find niches in all reality, right? And so I worked up the corporate ladder in the drug world and went from selling marijuana to cocaine to, you know, whatever in the world I could get my hands on. And I ended up getting caught with some and had to go do 2 years prison time. And I told myself, like, I know that there's money to be made in this country. I got to find a legal way to make it. I just got to line with the wrong people. And I was a dropout from school. I didn't have, like, you know, any influence or anything like that. So, I mean, this was like the first opportunity. And I made my own decisions. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that's what happened to me as a young man, right? 17, 18, 19 years old. But by the time I came out of prison after 2 years, I was a grown person. Like, I was a man. Like, you know, it was like, and not to compare the two, but like when a guy goes off to war or a guy goes to prison or a guy's like, you know, in a super traumatic situation, maybe he's taken hostage and like, or something of that nature, like it's super traumatic. You either emerge weak or you emerge strong. And fortunately for me, I emerged out of that place a man. Went back and worked at the car wash, right, because that's what losers do, and went back and worked at this car wash, but somebody recognized my hard work skills and then offered me to come work for them as a banker. And this was the kicker. She said, I'll teach you how to do all this stuff, and essentially it's like owning your own business and working for yourself because you're a contractor. And I thought, man, here's another opportunity to try this, right? And I was like, is this legal though, right, lady? It's legal? Okay, cool. But that was like, within, you know, I think it was within 3 weeks of working there, I'd made like $6,700. And within 8 weeks of working there, I'd made a total of like almost $20,000. And so I knew that at that point, I was like, oh man, I have found my lick. Now this was 2004 when, you know, you were like, hey, Lori, are you alive? Yes, here's $500,000 to go buy any house you want. It was like those days. And I took advantage of it. If they were going to put the money out there, I did my best to make as much money as I could from it as well. And I never took advantage of anybody, but I helped a whole lot of families get into houses that wouldn't have gotten to houses otherwise. I look at it as a positive thing. And, you know, I did a ton of loans. And then I got put in prison again. Wouldn't you freaking believe that shit, right? And so I was like riding on this high horse, $700,000 in a year in income in 2005. And I live in this small town. It's a big town now, but it was a small town then. And the police kicked in the door. They thought I was selling drugs. I'm like, drug dealers don't live in this neighborhood. Drug dealers live in the hood. You guys watch too many movies on TV. There's never drug dealers driving Rolls Royce except for in rap videos. That is it. That is it. Nobody's cruising my neighborhood going, yo, man, hey, you with the toddlers, you know where to get a dime sack? That's not happening over here. Right? But poor cops, they didn't have anything to do. There's literally no crime in the city. There's no drugs in my house. I don't even eat leftovers, so I don't even have sandwich bags to put this up in. It would have been drugs there anyway. And they were mad, right? They had all this intelligence. I kid you not. They had all this intelligence on the people that had come by. Because I did have a lot of people in my house, but it was like realtors getting a check, home investors coming and signing paperwork, people filling out applications. I just worked from home, but that wasn't a thing 15 years ago like it was now, like it is now. And so anyway, the cops kick in the door. They don't find anything, but my roommate and I have a gun, right? So he has one in his room, one in my room. Well, in Texas, you can have a gun. Like, this is part of your right. Even if you've committed a felony, you can have a gun. And so they arrested me for felon possession of a firearm, but then I beat the case and they dropped it. And the ATF, the damn DA was mad at me for whatever reason, just a hater, I guess, and turned me over to the ATF. And then the ATF gave me 15 months for felon in possession of a firearm. Apparently, it's like marijuana in Colorado. It's like, if the state trooper catches you with it, he's like, hey, man, just don't smoke and drive. Be cool. All right, brother. But if the DEA catches you with it, he's like, freeze, you're under arrest, you're going to jail. And isn't that crazy? It's like two people that serve the same purpose, right, but you have two completely different outcomes. That's what happened to me. It's like the state's like, yeah, you can have a gun. You know, you did your time. And the ATF's like, no, no, you cannot. No. And so they're obviously a lot more powerful than me. I couldn't have, I didn't want to, nor take the chance, nor fight them or anything. So I had to go do another 15 months, and I'm almost done with my story. And when I got out of prison again, I went back into banking and I crushed it. I made $300,000 over the course of about 18 months. And then Obama signed this thing called Dodd-Frank into law. The Democrats, when they had the House, they passed this law and he signed it into thing. And it was like a huge blow to the marketplace. They're trying to repeal it now, but it's been like a huge blow, especially to the financial sector. And it cost me my job, and it cost me my license, not my job. But ultimately, because I couldn't get my license to be able to operate, because of some federal stuff that they imposed on me, from the previous stint, then I lost my job and my ability to earn income. And that was when I finally said, I will never have another boss. I will never work for a system that requires me to have a license, a system that requires me to do anything other than pay taxes and make sure that my business is registered properly. I'm going to be in control of my own future. I'm tired of leaving this shit in other people's hands and me having to go, like, go to jail, lose your job, go to jail, lose your job, get the door. I'm done with that. And ever since then, things have been on the straight and narrow path, and I've built a hell of a nice little corral of businesses over the years.
I want to first point out the fact that one of the things that's kind of resounding throughout your entire story is the fact that you kept your eyes open and was always looking for an opportunity. It didn't really matter what the opportunity was. You didn't have a fear of failure. What you had was a drive to figure things out, whether it was, you know, selling drugs and ending up in prison, or coming back out and trying to sell mortgages and dealing with, you know, the ridiculousness that transpired thereafter. You really just made sure that you were looking for an opportunity the entire journey through. And at the end of that, you know, spark of your journey, you recognize that having control over your own income, no matter where that income was coming from, was probably the most important lesson you had learned throughout that entire story. I love the fact that you have absolutely no fear of failure. It's something I try to tell the audience on a regular basis, that there's no such thing as failure. There's only feedback. If you screw up on something, take the feedback from others who have explained to you that you screwed up and learn from that, grow from that, move forward from that. And that sounds exactly like what you have gone on to do. I mean, you are CEO and founder of Hardcore Closer and Break Free Academy. You're a four-time best-selling author, motivational speaker, a sales coach and podcast host, blogger. I know you also regularly contribute to a number of publications such as Forbes and Entrepreneur. Tell me a little bit about where the branding came from for you, for Hardcore Closer. Tell me a little bit about how you started, you know, your own practice and what you, you know, the journey with Hardcore Closer.
Well, you know, it's crazy, the story I just told you. I left out about a million details. I've had a hell of a life. And you could say it's hardcore, right? And so, you know, the one thing I will say, and we kind of talked about this before the interview here, is like sales has been the one thing, and entrepreneurship really is more than just sales, has been the one thing that's always there for me. When I ran away from home at 16 years old, you know, I went out and got a job at a different car wash and then ended up selling drugs, right? It was like I knew I could sell something to make money. And then when I got out of prison, I ended up selling mortgages, right? And it was the one, I didn't have parents that were there to support me. They didn't offer me money. I didn't have a scholarship. I didn't have a jump shot. I didn't have a savings account or one of those thrifty penny plans you're supposed to put together when your kids are born. Or I don't have any of that, right? And nobody was encouraging me, and I was the black sheep of my family because I was the troublemaker and I was different from everybody else because I didn't do athletics and stuff like that. And so I was a lot different. So I didn't really, nobody had my back, but sales and my ability to go sell stuff to be able to make money. And again, after I got out of prison, went and sold mortgages. After I lost my job in mortgages, I went and sold social media sites. Once I got really good at managing people's social media stuff, I started teaching it to people. And it's just been this progression. It's been the one thing that's there for me because I've never had a safety net. And so that's where like the hardcore thing comes from, is because I've obviously lived this hardcore lifestyle. And when I was working inside of this. I wasn't working for the company, but I was working inside this attorney's office, and they closed like mortgages for people, like, you know, and they called these little old ladies with like gray blue hair, you know, like the old ladies, like they're like 70-year-old ladies, like signing away documents and stuff. And they call them closers. Well, I had just come from the mortgage side, and I had been in car sales too for about 6 months while I was waiting on my kid to be born. And so I'm like, these little old ladies, man, there's some serious closers over here. They'd be signing your life away, right? It was just like jokes. And we were like, yeah, they're hardcore closers. And I was like, dude, I'm going to register that domain. That actually sounds kind of cool.
Nice.
And so I registered the domain, and I wrote a couple like cool little blog posts on there. They're still up there and from like 2012. And I wrote a couple little cool blog posts on there. And then one of them went like kind of like back then to me, it was viral. Like 1,000 people saw it or whatever. And people started calling me the hardcore closer. And I'm like, that's kind of a cool nickname. I'll go with that, right? Because if I would turn it down, what if they'd call me like Shitty Mitt Shit Pants or something like that? You never know what the hell they're going to give you. So like here's like a life tip for everybody listening. If people give you a cool nickname, go with that shit. Do not resist cool nicknames. And so I was like, okay, yeah, you can call me that. I'll take that, right? That's a lot better than what I've been called in the past. And the brand wasn't supposed to be me, though. It was supposed to be a brand. Like, you could be a hardcore closer, Lori, or anybody else, you know, that's listening. If they've got this, it's supposed to be like this lifestyle and everything else. But it turned into me somehow, you know. And over the years, I've been consistent. I was just looking today. I just posted our 717th blog post on there, and we've written all of them. They're not outsourced or anything else. I've written probably 710 of them. Myself, and so I've just been very consistent with it, and I've delivered great content over and over. And my writing style, this is why Forbes and them like me too. So my writing style is kind of like if we were just like sitting at a bar, and I put my arm around you, I'm like, listen, Laura, let me tell you a couple secrets about life. I just kind of give that vibe, like I'm your older brother, just like trying to lace you up, or you know, maybe a father figure trying to lace you up on how things really operate, right? And they dig it because it's a completely different writing style than anybody else out there. And like yesterday I wrote an article on Sunday, and I checked yesterday, and it had already been shared 14,000 times or something like that. So people really appreciate the stuff that we bring to the marketplace.
You are a four-time best-selling author, and you also have the blog and the podcast. But I'd love to know a little bit more about your newest book, Elevator to the Top.
So that's our best-selling book ever. I have 5 books, and that one we published last year, and it's our bestseller ever. I think there's over 15,000 people that have read the book, and I don't even remember how many pages on Kindle. It's insane, but. The book is basically everything you need to know about sales. Now, if you consider yourself an entrepreneur, you may say, oh, I'm not a salesperson, but you're probably going to hire one. You should give the book to them, right? And you should read it to know what to train them on, because this is a book that's like, I don't want to say the Bible because that's sacrilegious, but it's the handbook, the playbook for sales, because it tells you everything you need to know from like walking into the interview, closing the boss, into selling the stuff, into mastering your craft, into what questions you need to ask, what word tracks you can use, what thought process you need to go through, how to deal with your commission checks when you get them, how to invest your money, how to grow things long term, how to scale a sales team, and then ultimately how to build a business. It's like this whole process I put you through the entire book, and I write in a style that, you know, chapters are about 800 to 1500 words. So they're like easy to burn through. They're quick and to the point. And it's not a book that has a lot of fluff and a lot of boring stuff. When you read it, you're like, oh shoot, I read the chapter. I'm going to do that tomorrow. It's one of those kind of books. And, you know, we talked about it. You can get it for free at elevatortothetop.com. You can get a free paperback copy. All you got to do is pay like the postage or packing or whatever it is on there. But you can head to elevatortothetop.com and get it. There's, like I said, there's 15,000 people that have read the book, and that's not even counting Amazon sales. I don't even know what they've done on there. So
I will be sure to link to that through the show notes page. Thank you. Thank you. So I would love to know, if you had the opportunity to kind of rewind the clock a little bit, say 20, 30 years, had a time machine and could go back and tell yourself one thing, what do you think it would be?
You know, I just wrote an article about this on my blog, like maybe less than a week ago. And here's what I would say. I would just say, keep doing what you're doing and stay strong, man. Just don't quit, because I'm on this path for a reason. You know, I went through what I went through so that I could connect with a certain type of person out there. I'm not for everybody, but those that I'm for win. And it takes a certain attitude and a certain alpha personality to be able to align with me and to be able to do the things that I'm going to demand of that person to do in order to be successful. And I couldn't make those demands. I couldn't hold myself in that space, and people wouldn't look at me in authority if I hadn't gone through all this bullshit. When someone's like, oh, my wife's going to leave me. Dude, I've been divorced 3 times. Had to start over every time and get your ass back to work. Somebody says, oh, I can't afford it. I got a DWI. Dude, I'm into prison twice and started all back over. You're still free. Get your ass back to work. Oh, man, you know, I'm having a hard time coming up with the money. Maybe need to wake up a little bit earlier and make some sales and maybe stay up a little bit later at night, too, until you get your stuff back in order, man. Like, I can come back and give somebody any resistance they give me, and they can't doubt me because I'm sitting here living proof that I've done all this stuff. It's not everything that I've done is pretty much public record, from my success in the mortgage business to my criminal record to the fact that I'm in Forbes and have written a bunch of bestsellers. And so it's hard for the people that come to me to give me excuse. They don't. It's impossible. But it takes a certain type of personality that's willing to not endure the abuse, but willing to step up and level up and say, you know what, I'm just going to have to set all my excuses aside and do this. And I had to go through all those things to get there with strength conditioning, because I'm not a weak person, and I deal with people who are not weak either. They've got extremely tough exteriors. Most of the folks that I work with already make 6 and 7 figures a year anyway, so it's not like I work with rookies that are just getting started in things. And so I'm working with alphas with tough exteriors who are already successful, that did it on their own. And if I hadn't been through all the shit that I have been through in my lifetime, there's no way that I could connect and help those people. Because here's the secret, I'm going to let your audience in on this. Is like, people think of me as a sales coach, and the Hardcore Closer brand is about sales, but that's just one of our brands. We have Break Free Academy, which has a whole fleet of different products. And then, you know, I'm Ryan too. My goal really is to change people's minds, because when you change your mind, you change your life. And I'm set out here to change 300 million lives, and sales is the gimmick that we get you in the door, we help you make more money. But guess what? Once you start making more money, you get respect from your kids, you get respect from your spouse, you get respect from your boss, you get respect from your employees, you get respect from the community, you get respect from your banker, you get respect from the places that you dine frequently, you get respect from your network, and that changes things for a human being. That makes people go from being depressed and let down and upset and underdog to a feeling of confidence, walking around, carrying themselves good. That's why you see successful buying nice cars and nice homes, right? Because they have the confidence in themselves. It feels good to be doing that stuff. And there's a lot of folks out there that I couldn't help them achieve that stuff if I hadn't been through a lot of stuff in my life as well.
I love it. And you are 100% correct. It's about moving forward, just continuing to keep moving forward, having that stamina and not making any excuses. I love the way you were explaining how, you know, no matter who it is that comes to you, they can make all the excuses they want. But you've been there, you've done that, and you've been through so much that you can show them there's really not much that they can come to you with an excuse as to why it is they can't themselves continue to keep moving forward. I think willpower is an extremely important portion of this journey, and it's something that people should kind of bone up on if they do intend to embark on an entrepreneurial journey, is really making sure that they have the passion for what it is they're attempting to embark on, so that they will have the drive and the will to continue to move forward. Ryan, the show is really designed to help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for a new business and solve a pain in an industry that they may not have been thinking of. I'd love to know, if I lent you the magic wand that I have over here and you could kind of wave it and change anything at all in any one of your practices or in your writing or so forth, what would it be and why?
You know, one of the things that that we talk about daily is that we are unorganized over here. I am a content machine, and we have 1,400 YouTube videos, 1,500 pages on the website that we've created, 14 products, thousands of testimonials, and, you know, hundreds of Facebook groups and emails, and Jesus, our email list is huge. And so, and it grows every day, obviously, and we are just not put together. Like, I got friends like my buddy Russell Brand, and I know what to do. That's the sad thing, is I know what to do, ain't got time to do it. And I haven't found somebody that I trust to do it either. So a magic wand would be like the perfect solution for me. But the thing is, like, I got my friends like Russell Brunson. He'll write a blog post, And then the blog post will be tied into an email, and that'll specifically retarget somebody. And then that retargeting thing specifically retarget. He's like thought 100 steps ahead, whereas mm-hmm. I just wrote the blog post and put an ad to it, and we just take what we get from it. I happen to be really damn good at that. I am, and we make a lot of money from it. But, I mean, if somebody came through and stitched me together, holy shit, we're probably sitting on another $30 million in income that we could put together just if somebody actually had the expertise to put it together. But
just
like
retargeting,
I've been searching for that person forever, and it's a lot deeper than that, and a lot of it's a time factor. And, you know, we're not uncomfortable now. We're doing a lot now, but we could probably do 5 or 6 times as much if we were put together. So it's just the organization of the content, I guess, would be the best way to put it.
Awesome. The content organization simplification method is kind of what it sounds like. And hopefully one of our listeners will go ahead and tackle that. Ryan, like I said, you've been absolutely wonderful. And I truly appreciate you sharing so much of your journey and the information. And you've been hilarious, to tell you the truth. But please, share the best way for our listeners to find you.
Yeah, so you're probably on all sorts of social media sites. So the best thing to do is just go over to hardcorecloser.com, and at the very top there's all the little social media icons. You can connect with me anywhere from there. And sign up. You get like a free book and stuff over there at the website. You're going to love my emails. You think I'm hilarious on here, wait till you get drunken emails from me a time or two. They're good. You'll love them. I'll be the only email you ever get that's like, buy or die, damn it. Like, no other sales guy's going to say that. So lots of entertainment for you. But it's just jokes, people. Don't get upset and be emailing me back that I should be, like, repenting and giving my life to Jesus and stop cussing and everything. It's just jokes, people. It's just jokes.
Well, we will definitely be linking to the blog through the magazine and through the show notes page as well, so I'm sure our listeners will look forward to checking that out as well. Ryan, thank you, thank you. I truly appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I had a good time talking about me on your show.
Ryan, thank you once again for joining us. This was an exceptionally fun conversation. You're hilarious. Techie community, don't forget to go grab your free copy of Elevator to the Top so you can get started on your journey of becoming a hardcore closer yourself. If you'd like to touch base with Ryan, you can reach him through hardcorecloser.com. You can always find him through our show notes page at technology-equality.com/Ryan Stuman. Techie community, thank you guys for joining us here for episode 69. And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain, and create solutions, enjoy the week.